What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles, made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button, and now back to the show.
We have a very special guest in studio today. He's a friend of mine, the great and powerful Tom Simcox. Welcome.
Hey. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be great, man. So, you know, for the people out there that don't know you, Tom, just give us kind of like a real brief overview and we'll really kind of dive into things in more detail here just for the people out there that don't know you. Just a little brief summary.
Yeah, I'll keep it real brief. First of all, I'm a father and I'm a husband. That comes first. And what am I currently doing now? I own a couple businesses that are real estate related towards development and property management. And in addition to that, I'm also a wealth coach, a wealth wellness coach. And before that, I was working as the CEO of a large real estate company here in St. Charles County, and being a coach for entrepreneurs and real estate agents, high-level real estate agents and business owners for a few years. And before that, I was living abroad for quite a few years and self-described vagabond. So yeah, I've kind of done it all in my short life and looking forward to adding a lot more. I'm kind of the type of person that believes that there's no point in living just one life. We have a great opportunity here on this world, and why not live dozens of lives within the opportunity?
Yeah, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. So you self-described vagabond. Tell us about those years of living abroad and being a vagabond.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, I mean, to bring it to, you know, what you guys try and get here, the mix between entrepreneurship and life and purpose and things like that. You know, when I was, I guess what living abroad did for me and how it relates to entrepreneurship is that it really gave me the opportunity to realize that, I'm a believer that a lot of our success in life has to do with our own self-image, the way that we see ourselves and the habits of that and habits and routines that creates. And living abroad really gave me the opportunity to find out that I am very much in control of my self-image and that I have the opportunity to shape my self-image and that in turn shapes who I become and what I can accomplish.
Wow. So I know you said you lived in 7 different countries over the course of 5 years.
Yeah. And it started with a study abroad program. Living abroad, it gives you that opportunity. So how did it help me to develop that idea that it helps to shape your self-image and things like that? I think that what a lot of people neglect to understand is how much our environment really shapes who we are and our self-image, right? So we're very influenced by our environment. And I think a second part of that is towards our self-image is our habits and our routines that we bring into our daily lives. So studying abroad and living abroad, okay, how does that help? Number one, you're thrust into a whole new environment. Your environment has changed, and that gives you an opportunity towards a new perspective. It's quite common for us to hear people say, oh, well, you know, going and traveling, that really changed the way that going to traveling abroad, that really changed the way that I saw things. It really opened my eyes. That's something that we hear really often. And I guess it's that perspective that gives us the opportunity to look at things in a different light, and it challenges our belief system, right? The way that the things that we believe are true, the things that we think are true, right? And it opens up a new perspective. And not only are we seeing a new culture, a new way of life, but we're inserting ourselves into that new culture and that new way of life. And it helps us to create self-awareness around who we are as a person and how we are going to show up as a person of potential and show up in that new environment. And the second is, you know, with our habits and our routines, well, when you go and you end up in a new place, well, your habits and routines are completely disrupted. So you have an opportunity to really turn the page and start new habits, new routines. And that helps, again, to re-identify who you are and see how you show up in that new environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
So a couple questions on that. So when you did this and you went to did the travel abroad and then living abroad, was this you just being introspective and realizing like, hey, I want to do this to help me figure out who I am as a person? And then with that, was there a particular place that you traveled to that really hit like really made an impression on you that was like, hey, this is who I am?
Yeah, that's a great question because again, we are products of our environment and we always neglect how much our environment is shaping that personal image. And so the first time that I actually moved abroad was a study abroad program, and I went to the Netherlands. And why did I go there? Because that's where my brother went in college, right? And so I was being a product of my environment. I was being influenced by someone in my life who had done something, and so I made that choice. So the first part was I was influenced by that. And the second is at that time, I was just, you know, I just like wasn't feeling good. I was kind of in an unhappy place and I really wasn't sure why. And I wanted to put myself, and I think that this is very often something that you hear about people that go and travel. They say that they go and, you know, want to go find themselves or whatever. And, you know, from then to now, the way that I've reshaped that story is that I was not yet in alignment with who I was. I was not yet in alignment with my potential. I did not have a clear mission, vision about my life. And when I went there, so how did it show up when I was there? I got to self-discover who I was. So I'm thrust into this new environment. I'm now in the Netherlands. I am no longer with my friends. I'm no longer with my family. This is before cell phones and Zoom calls and things like that. So I'm completely on my own. What did I show up with? I showed up with my potential, right? And really the self-discovery and the way to shape my self-identity started with unintentional self-discovery. I show up and I'm in this new environment. I'm around new people. And what do I start to see about myself? I'm not a shy person that I thought I was in high school. It's not hard for me to make new friends. I'm actually good at making new friends. I'm not a follower. I'm a leader. All of these things start to show up and I'm starting to have clues about who I actually am and my true potential.
Oh, that's awesome. And was there a particular place that you lived in that really allowed you to understand this, or was it just a combination of all the places?
It was a journey. Yeah. It really was. Yeah. Because so then I go from the Netherlands the second time that I study abroad. So again, I had a great opportunity. We're shaped by our environment. The school that I was going to, University of Central Missouri, had really great study abroad programs, and people weren't taking advantage of them. So there was a lot of grants and scholarships that were just not being gobbled up. So I decided to gobble them all up. Yeah. I studied abroad again, went to Germany, this time for a year. So I actually finished my university experience in Germany. And so I really took this to the next step. And this time, learning what I had kind of learned from that self-discovery in the Netherlands and that first experience, I now started to go from self-discovery to trying to shape my identity, starting to construct or design who I was instead. I had seen that potential. Now, how can I add to it? I wanted to show up in Germany and be the type of person that has friends from all over the world, that is shamelessly friendly, shamelessly outgoing. So I chose to be that person. I asked myself the conditions of, if this is the result I want, what needs to be true about my personality? What needs to be true for me to show up to get these results? And so I just went in there and I just leaned into it. And at first, is, you know, we call this fake it until you make it, right? And I think the stereotype of Americans over there is that we're friendly, we're outgoing, big cowboy hat, howdy, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just leaned into it. And I not only faked it until I made it, but I started to discover that this is who I really am. I'm an outgoing person. I'm a leader. I am friendly. And I have all of this potential that started showing up. And really each step of the way I guess an important note to throw in there is that when I was in Germany finishing up school, it was 2008, 2009. Oh, okay. So a lot of our friends, you know, that are getting out of school at the same time, they're going back to their high school jobs. So I'm just like, well, you know, things are going pretty well here. I'll just stay here. So I stayed for a while. And then really leaning into this thing that I'm discovering, that throwing myself into new environments and having this potential and this opportunity for self-discovery, I wanted to throw myself deeper into the pool. So I moved to Southeast Asia and end up in Thailand for several years.
Wow. So what made you choose Thailand?
It's just the unknown. It was a completely different environment. Yeah, it was
going from Germany to Thailand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And going from, you know, America to Thailand to Southeast Asia. I had taken a small trip to Morocco with some of my friends in Germany, and I just loved how exotic it was, you know, for a lack of a better word. It was, everything was completely different about it. So I wanted to go and live somewhere completely different. Again, like I was having this experience where I was going somewhere new, and that was challenging my belief system. Putting myself into a new perspective was challenging my belief systems, challenging the things that I thought I knew to be true. And when I could start chipping away at the things that I thought were true, I started to discover what was really true about myself.
Okay. Wow.
So how long did you stay in Thailand then?
I was back and forth in Southeast Asia for about four to five years.
So are you working when you're in Thailand, or like, what are you doing for money?
Yeah, again, so this comes back to the vagabond part. So there was a good amount of years where I was being very scrappy. I was teaching English, tutoring English, working at Irish pubs here and there, just any way to kind of support my lifestyle. And again, kind of going back to that idea of finding out what was true about myself, was that I didn't need to, what I learned about myself was that I didn't need to have this big career job, or I didn't need to have a lot of money to be happy and to feel fulfilled. For me, the adventure was fulfillment. I was identifying that I had a lot of passion around this discovery and experience that was bringing a lot of that energy into my life.
And I'm sure that especially that, I mean, that comes into help a lot with what you're doing now on the financial literacy side of things. Like, you learned early on that you don't need a lot of money and to live frugally. I'm sure that carries over into how, or does it carry over into how you work with your clients on financial literacy and wealth management and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because it goes back to how you perceive yourself, how you see yourself. Our self-identity really leads to our thoughts. Our thoughts lead to our feelings lead to our actions lead to our results. Very often we are caught in a cycle of seeing our results and having a self-identity based on our results. And we are caught in kind of a trap where, so we often get stuck in this cycle where we're defining ourselves by our results. And if we're getting results that we're not liking, we start to blame ourselves. We start to have bad feelings about that, and we don't know how to break that cycle. So when it comes to entrepreneurship, or when it comes to building wealth, building financial independence, when it comes to anything that we define ourselves as, or when it comes to any kind of result that we are trying to get, we need to work our way backward and really start to identify ourselves as who we want to be. We need to get very clear about our mission in life, our vision in life, our mission, vision, values, beliefs, perspectives, so that we can then start putting into place the actions that somebody would do like that. So, like, for example, you guys both do jiu-jitsu, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what are the habits of somebody that does jiu-jitsu at a high level?
Well, they show up to the gym every day.
Consistent.
They're practicing proper techniques. They're drilling with really good training partners.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting themselves in uncomfortable situations constantly.
Really, like, doing hard things, just doing a lot of really hard things.
Yeah.
Consistency. Consistently.
So there's habits around that, and those habits are hard, as you're saying. So why do we do hard things? Because we believe that we are that type of person. If you were not passionate about it, if jiu-jitsu was not something that lit you up and gave you energy, you wouldn't be willing to do those hard things. So you identify yourself as somebody that chooses to be on the path of mastery in a certain field. So it's not just about wealth creation. It's not about entrepreneurship. It's not about the sport that you want to be in. It's about anything that we want to accomplish. We need to get really clear about who we choose to be and then put in place the habits. We need to ask ourselves, all right, I am this person. What are the habits that this person has? What needs to be true for me to become this person down the road?
Now, would you say that's like the biggest obstacle people have with their financial literacy is they just don't know what they want to be? Or
Yeah. It's two things. It comes back to where we started, where we are products of our environment, right? So we are very much shaped by the environment around us. Especially nowadays, we are being bombarded by messages telling us who we should be, what we should buy, what success looks like, et cetera. We are no longer defining our success. We have not taken the time to define our own success. I often talk about, relate wealth building to playing a board game, or really, again, you can use this metaphor for anything. We are living life, and it's just like playing a board game, and we know we're playing the game. We refer to it as playing the game, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of us don't know how to play it. We have not been given the rules. And even further is we don't know why we're playing. What is the objective to our game? I mean, so we ask these big questions sometimes, and we don't know the answer to it. What is the meaning of life, right? I mean, do you have?
It's different to everybody.
Yeah, exactly, and it should be. And you guys have a more intuitive feeling around what your mission, vision, values is, or else you wouldn't be doing something like this. But there's so many people that have not taken the time to identify what their mission in life is. So my mission in life is to live an extraordinary life with variety, to live purposefully, and to enjoy every second of it, to try and milk it for everything that it can be. And in doing so, inspire others to do the same thing. I know what the objective of my game is. And then I can go to the how. How do I do that? Well, for me, entrepreneurship is a way for me to design my life. It makes it easier to have the flexibility, et cetera. So I have the rules of the game. I have said, if I'm the type of person that is going to live purposefully, if I'm the type of person that is going to travel with my family, if I am the type of person that is going to live dozens of lives within one, then what needs to be true to make that happen? I'm defining the how: entrepreneurship, financial independence, etc. So for me, financial independence, it's not the goal. I'm passionate about financial independence. I'm passionate about real estate, but not as passionate as the other things. Not as passionate about the why. The why is what gets me, is what gets me up in the morning and doing the routine of learning, et cetera, to do the things to become that person. Financial independence for me is the tool to get me there. And everybody needs to define what those tools are as well.
And it sounds like you take a very holistic approach to your coaching in terms of breaking it all the way down and getting to that, you know, mission statement or why behind you want behind your life.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you go about getting somebody to break their old belief system and getting into a new belief system?
Yeah, it takes time. It does take time because these are not things that we often reflect on. And it takes time for people to get out of their way and to stop being influenced or really to shut out the influences of the outside world, to shut out all of that messaging and really reflect on what's important to them. Some of the exercises that we do is, if you ask a very broad question, you're going to get a very broad answer, right? So if I ask you what's important to you or tell me what a perfect day is for you, you're going to get a very broad answer. But if we break down those sections into, okay, 10 years from now, let's say health is important to you. 10 years from now, you wake up and you are in the health that you choose to be. You have written and designed your health, your vision for health. Wake up and tell me what that looks like to you 10 years from now, and say it in the present tense, say it as if it's already happened, bring enthusiasm to it, be positive. Don't say what you're not, say what you are. You want to jump in or maybe either of you want to?
So if I wake up 10 years from now, what do I want my health to look like?
Or pick right. A category that you'd like.
No, I mean, health is an easy one. I want to be able to wake up. I want all of my whole body to work. I want to be able to, you know, chase my kids around, go for a run, you know, train jujitsu. I want to be able to do all those things comfortably. I want to, you know, when I look in the mirror, I want to be happy with what I see and be proud of what I see. Yeah, but I mean, it's mostly just so I can live a long, happy life with my kids. I want to be as healthy and as strong and, you know, carry as much, you know, strength and muscle mass as I can, just so that I can, because, I mean, that's going to keep me young and vital and strong and healthy.
Yeah, have energy showing up. Like you said, you're bringing your family into it, have energy for my children, being able to live at a high level. In 10 years, how old will you be?
31 or 41.
Okay. Yeah. So do you think that a lot of people are going to have that result when they're 41? Do you think that the average person is going to have that result when they're 41?
Not in this country.
Right. Exactly. So when we are being unintentional, when we let our environment, like you just pointed out, not in this country, and that's so true. When we let the environment affect us, when we let the environment write our narrative for us and create our habits and create, you know, our expectations, then we are going to become the result of that. But when you become purposeful and you design it, now what are the habits that you do on a regular basis? To be that person 10 years from today, what are the things that you're going to wake up and do tomorrow to make sure that that happens?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna drink my water. I'm going to take my vitamins. I'm going to make sure I'm eating an adequate amount of protein. I'm making sure I'm getting to the gym, whether it's jujitsu or CrossFit or lifting weights. I'm going to, you know, make sure I'm eating properly. I'm going to be, you know, giving myself nourishment through, you know, good quality food. And I'm not going to eat junk. You know, I mean, junk's okay every once in a while, but it's not something I'm going to live on.
Yeah.
I mean, all of those things, I think, all add up to me being healthy in 10 years from now.
So now let's say that you are somebody that has not yet been on this health journey, but it's important to you. Let's say that you are in bad shape, that your knees are already hurting, et cetera, but you still choose that same vision for yourself. What is something that you could do tomorrow that's just going to improve your habits by 1%?
Go for a walk.
Right.
That's the easiest thing I think people do.
Track your food.
Track your food is a big one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Right. And tracking is really important, right? We need visuals. We need to see what we're doing, because what we focus on really expands. What we focus on really, we have the opportunity to grow in. And so a lot of people are stuck. They are petrified by the fact that they think that they are so out of alignment that they think that they need to, that there's just no change, right? They think that it needs drastic action to get them back on track, when really all that we need to do is just 1% better, 1%, 1% better. We just need to start adding those habits in day by day, week by week, month by month, and let them accumulate. Because when we start doing new habits, when we start rejecting the narrative that's been given to us, and we change that narrative, all right, we're changing our identity, the way that we see ourselves, and then we are starting to put those habits in, and we're starting to see the results. Exercise is such a good example of this. Health and exercise is such a good example of this, because I think everyone has, at least for a while, gone on some kind of health routine where they've started to see progress. And that starts to change your self-image. Well, it's the same for anything, right? It's the same for financial habits. It's the same for wealth building. It's the same for exercise. It's the same for insert whatever your goal is there. It's just putting in the reps.
Yeah.
And when we're putting in the reps, we start to see the results, and it changes our self-image. And then we're no longer faking it until we make it. We're truly becoming that person. And it becomes that the habits become our self-identity. And then when it's our self-identity, it starts to change our autopilot. And that's when real change happens.
Yeah. My favorite analogy for this like whole concept is like building a mountain out of layers of paint. You know, like every day you put another layer down, and eventually, you know, you got a little hill and then a little bump. And then just every day you're adding another layer. Takes a lot of time to really see the results. But if you're consistent with it, you're going to build that mountain.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So,
but to get back to the original question before we went off on this weave. Yeah. We're talking about travel and things like that. And I think that, by the time that I went to Thailand, by the time that I went to Southeast Asia, what I started to realize, or what I started to conceptualize at a higher level, is that I could start to build my identity. And it was never fraudulent. It was never false. I think that some people think that, you know, we say fake it until you make it, and we feel fraudulent. But really, I mean, we're doing it within our values. We're doing it within some kind of construct of who we want to be, and that's based on our potential, right? When we get clear about our mission in life and our vision for our future, we should be allowed to try on new clothes, put on a new jacket. If we weren't, we'd all still be wearing JNCO jeans and stuff like that and looking like fools, right? So we're allowed to change. We should be excited about changing. So by the time that I got to Southeast Asia, you know, I was trying on more extreme things to the point to where, you know, the vagabond, right? Yeah. I'm just like, hey, I want to be like a lost boy, right? Peter Pan lost boy. Yeah, exactly. And so started going on adventures and getting myself into just weird circumstances based on this new belief system of who I chose to be. And I started with this mantra of, you know, step one, believe. Step two, get involved. And just do it, right? Just do it. Try it on and do the things that that person would do.
Well, do you have any of those specific circumstances that you kind of put yourself in that stand out?
I'll share a good one. And I gave you a teaser on this one at our meetup. Where to start this story? It's a very long story, so I'm going to give you the really quick version.
Oh, man, we got time.
Yeah. it's a long one. I'll start on a rooftop in Chiang Mai. I was in Chiang Mai. I'd already been living in Thailand for about a year, and I was in a really small town, Sawan Kalok, where it was literally me and three other foreigners living in this town. No one else spoke English. I was an English teacher. It was just very small. And after putting in my year there teaching at this school, I really wanted to move to Chiang Mai. It's this mountain village up in northern Thailand, very jungly, very Rasta. There are little Rasta bars and things like that, just to kind of give a little settings. Anybody that's been to Chiang Mai, they know what I'm talking about right now. This is one of my favorite cities in the world. And my intention was to go there and get a job. But the problem is that, especially during, you know, the past couple of decades, Thailand does this thing where they like to, you know, have a coup every few years. It's like the Olympics there. So they were experiencing one of these political coups, and this one got particularly bad to the point to where there was a curfew and they had shut down the schools, and it just wasn't really a good time to be looking for a job or really a good time to be in Thailand at all.
Here you are.
Yeah. And so here I am on the rooftop of a guest house, because we can't go out because the Rasta bars are shut down. There's no place to dance, you know? So sitting on the rooftop, and I meet this guy from Australia, and he's telling a group of us about what he does. And he's a travel writer for a small newspaper in Geraldton, Australia. And he's going on about how he just travels around and he goes on little adventures, and he needs to write, you know, so many words, and it gets submitted and gets published once a week. And I'm sitting here, and my wheels start spinning. I go, wait a minute. So you're telling me that you need to do something stupid enough every week to write a story about it? I'm like, I am your guy. Yeah. So I travel with him for about 2 years. No. Yeah. So what do we immediately do? Well, we decide that we're going to go to Laos. We're going to get out of Thailand, remove ourselves from the environment, and go on a little adventure. So Josh and I and a gal from Saskatchewan, Canada, go up to Laos, and we have this idea that we are going to get a boat and sail it down the Mekong River. This is our big idea. Again, step one, believe. Step two, get involved. And what did I believe at that time? I believe that I am a vagabond. Yeah. I believe that I'm a lost boy, right? Yeah. So I'm going to do what a lost boy does, whatever I want, right? Yeah. Main character energy.
Yeah.
So we go to Luang Prabang, a big city in Laos. And we exchange our lonely planet for an SAS, you know, Special Forces Survival Guide. We buy machetes, we buy rope, all these things that we're going to need.
Yeah, you know,
to be on a boat and sail it down the Mekong River, right? We have no idea what we're doing. None of us are, you know, boat experts. I was probably the one with the most boating experience, you know, growing up on the river, you know, Missouri River and stuff like that, which is still very limited and not very good.
Yeah, what the comparison between the Missouri River and the Mekong? Yeah,
we just didn't care. So we take all of our stuff and we head up north, up the Namu River, and we end up in this really small fisherman village where we're going to go and we're going to buy a boat. And problem is, turns out it is illegal to sell a boat to foreigners in Laos. Probably for good reason, right? Mm. Because they don't want us killing ourselves on the Mekong River. But we are not deterred, right? This is we are the lost boys. We're gonna make this happen.
Yeah.
So again, you know, just step one, believe. Step two, get involved. And the three of us were just a mix of just we weren't saying no to any bad ideas. I mean, good ideas, whatever. So what do? We go into the jungle. We start cutting down bamboo and we build a raft.
Oh, no.
So for 3 days, we're sneaking off into the jungle and we're cutting down bamboo and we're building this raft and we build this awesome raft. This thing is so cool. And
you have to send us pictures of it.
So yeah. Oh, yeah.
We can put some up on
my phone. Yeah, yeah. I'll send them over to you. And so we finish our raft and the locals, this is a very small town. They knew us. They had gotten familiar with us. They knew we were around. They didn't know what we were up to. They didn't know why we were going into the jungle. But we get our raft and we put it on the water. We put it on the Namu and we sail down and we bring it down to the village. We pull it up. And I mean, as we're riding down, you know, some of them are giving us thumbs up like, yeah, and some of them are just going like, oh, you know,
and how big this is
a terrible idea.
I mean, it's like probably twice the size of your table here.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good rag.
Yeah, good rag.
So we had a lot of rope. I didn't even utilize that rope. So we pull it up and we go and we get water, we get supplies. We're on our way. Right. So, we come back to our raft and there's some guys there and they're asking us in as good of English as they can, you know, what's your plan? Like, what's going on here? We're like, oh, we're just going to sail it down. We're going to Luang Prabang. We're going to make our way back. And they're just like, no, you're not. We're like, oh, well, yeah. We're just going to write it down. No big deal. And we never knew if this was a threat or if they were warning us, but they go, no, you sail. And they go like this, like, are you threatening us or are we going to kill ourselves? We're not sure. So they leave and, we get on the boat. We get on the raft and we start going. So we go down probably just like a mile the first day, just testing it out. And then we stop. And the first night, we stay on a sand barge on the side and, you know, success. We party. We had a bottle of Lao whiskey. We drink up that night and have a little party. And then the next day, waking up, and Josh and I, we take the raft down a little bit and we're trying to catch breakfast. We're going to go fishing. Right? We're lost boys. That's what we do. And Molly is still up on the sand barge around a bend, and then it curves around, and she's like signaling us. She's like, they're coming. We're like, what's going on? Well, anyway, the police, you know, the people that had stopped us the day before, they're bringing their boat down, and they find us. They're not happy, so they strap they put us on our raft, and they tie the raft to the boat, and they pull us back up to this town, and they bring us to their jail. It's a hut, right? It's like the size of this room. And now keep in mind, I had been in this small town in Thailand for a year now, and my Thai had actually gotten like pretty usable. Mm-hmm. Laotian is very close to Thai. Just a couple words change. They don't know. They don't suspect that I understand what they're saying. And so I can hear like the main police officer talking to the one that has the really broken English, telling him to, you know, what to ask us, et cetera. And they are just confused. They have no idea what to do with us. And so So we are purposefully trying to confuse them. They're saying,
well, and you're not doing anything illegal by, or
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I still don't know. And they're asking us where we got the bamboo, and we're all, I mean, the three of us point in different directions. It's hilarious. It's like a comedy sketch, and they are just, they're so confused. And I hear them trying to figure out what to do with this, and it's turning into that they're going to shake us down, right? They're going to see what we can get out of this. And so they decide that what we had done wrong was that we illegally took someone's bamboo, and, you know, and they're pointing to the other side of the river. We weren't over there. It doesn't matter. So we're getting ready for the real shoe to drop. Again, like long story short, they come to this number, and they say this number, and we're thinking it's going to be this huge number. And then like we convert in our heads, and it's like $30. So we're like, oh yeah. You know, trying to play it off. It's damn. Like, I guess we can do that, you know? And so there was a funeral or something like that that day. And so the two officers or the two, whatever they are, they needed to leave to go to this funeral, and they're like, okay, well, we're not done here. You guys need to stick around, and we're gonna figure this out later. So they leave, they go to the funeral, and we're sitting again in a.
So you guys are just like in a hut. Like,
yeah, we're in a hut about this size of the room,
like, and locked in, or is it like
no, right, no, okay.
Okay. Like they're not like no. You're not like handcuffed or anything.
No,
just like sit here.
Right. So I
stay.
So I look at Josh. Josh looks at me. We look at Molly, and we're like, we should get out of here, right?
Doors open, right?
So we left. There was one boat ferry. Like, this was the only way to get in and out of town. There's this one boat ferry that came. It came around the same time every day. So we just ran, and we got all of our stuff, and we jumped on the ferry. We abandoned the raft.
Man, oh, lost the raft.
And but we escaped from prison, I guess you could say. and then we got back to Luang Prabang and went back to our old guest house, you know, just kind of went in, you know, blended in again. And that was my 25th birthday.
Wow. Yeah. Damn, dude, that's crazy.
He saw Hangover 3 and was like, how can I recreate this over in Southeast Asia?
Yeah.
Dude, that's wild. So how long did you stay in Thailand? So you went from Thailand to where then? At what point do you come back to the United States? And like what influenced that?
It's a long story. It's a lot of bouncing around. So it was... So I've lived legally, like, with residents in seven countries.
How many without? Illegally.
Yeah. Wow, apparently. Yeah. So legally I've lived in Netherlands, Germany, Portugal, Romania, Australia, Thailand, and America. So there's a lot of bouncing around here, there, you know, stuff like that. I mean, another big part of this story is that when I was studying in Germany, I met the girl that's now my wife. She was also studying abroad. She's from Romania. So there's still a lot of, you know, traveling to Romania each year and things like that. But yeah, bouncing around for quite a few years. And then at some point, Elena and I moved back to Thailand together. And we both started teaching English at a college in Bangkok, and we lived together for long enough to realize that we wanted to get married and start a family and, you know, become adults. So we decided to move to America, really with the intention to come here, get her a blue passport, to make traveling easier, because there's a lot fewer visa restrictions for Americans than it was for Romanians at that time. So we wanted to get the blue passport, get some of that American money, mm-hmm. and really, you know, piss off again and go live abroad. And that's what we've been working on since we moved back. And
how long have we been back now?
So we moved back in 2014.
Okay.
So 2014 is now 2025, and we're almost there. There's been some delays.
COVID.
Well, COVID, yeah.
2 years
and late. And having two children,
okay.
Right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
And
how old are they?
Our kids are 7 and 2.
Okay.
And of course that moves the goalpost a bit. When it's just two people, you know, being a vagabond is fun. It's kind of the goal. When you have kids, you need to start being a little bit more responsible. You need to think about what that means for, you know, their future and things like that. So that moved the goalpost quite a bit. And it went from, hey, let's get $1,000 of passive income to, you know, let's make this our new goal and then start traveling again. But our intention at this point is to start homeschooling our children next year and start traveling and living abroad with them. We're going to keep a home base here in the St. Louis area, but start, you know, doing, you know, what we call like a study abroad program for the kids. We're thinking about going to South America. That's the intention for fall of next year. And, and just continue to live purposefully and reintroduce a lot of travel and new perspective back into our future.
Wow. Sounds like a great way to shape well-rounded children.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've heard you guys talking about this in some of your other episodes, but you know, just the education system and is this right for where we are in this influx right now with our society? I'm kind of in the same mindset as you guys that we are really our school system is not reflecting the future that we're coming into. So, you know, we're by introducing some of this perspective, again, going back to perspective for our children, giving them the opportunity to experience different things, experience different cultures and opportunities, it's going to help them at an earlier age identify who they are, identify their mission, their vision, their values, so that they can move forward with that. Because it makes decision making easier. Going back to the coaching aspect of it, when we can replace the thought of I am going to let's put this back in the context of financial independence and wealth and things like that. When I can replace the feeling of I am making this purchase because it makes me feel good now, and replacing that with the feeling of I choose to tell my money where to go and how I spend my money because I have a clear vision for my future. I know why I'm investing because I know how that accumulates into opportunity for the future. And then I know what I'm doing and who I am.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. It's funny because the guest we just had on episode is going to come out right before yours, was talking about how he's divorced and has in a new relationship. He's got 3 kids. She's got 4. Her 4 are all homeschooled. His 3 are all in there. And to see the difference between the two of them, or the two groups, he's like, yeah, the homeschool kids work for 3 hours a day and get as much done in those 3 hours as my kids do when they go to school for 8.
Yeah. A word that I use all the time is intentionality. And, you know, I think that the school system is acceptable, totally acceptable. Mm. And I think that the school that our daughter's going to now is totally acceptable. And I think that there's value to it, et cetera. But are they being intentional? And it's challenging to be intentional when you have so many kids at so many different learning levels, with so many different goals, et cetera, when you really break down how much they are accomplishing in that amount of time, you really realize that it's not just that they're going there to learn. It's that, you know, again, what is our environment? We're being shaped to just think that being somewhere for 8 hours is the goal, right? And our work experience is also shaped that way around that mentality. I show up to work. I punch in, I stay there for 8 hours and I get paid. Whereas entrepreneurship is all about changing that belief system to being intentional. And the time that I put in, I'm going to get compensated for the value that I'm bringing. It's a very different way of looking at it.
Absolutely. Well, how long after you got back to the States did you start real estate, start coaching, start all of that?
Yeah. I got back and it was actually really challenging coming back, because at that point, what was my identity? My identity was, you can drop me anywhere in the world, in any of these other countries, and I will thrive. But being dropped back into America, I'm just like, I don't know how to function inside of this society anymore. I don't know how to create the resume and things like that. So I did need to start over. However, I was drawn to entrepreneurship because it was more in alignment with my values. It's more in alignment with what we were just talking about. You're getting compensated for what you're doing. So I was actually reaching out to some people. One person in particular, who I had met while traveling, and he was really influential on me because he was another teacher in Thailand, and he was just there as like a, it was just fun for him, right? Oh, this is an experience I'm going to do. And he made all of his money. He was a real estate developer in Boston, still is. And he's just like, oh, I'm just here for the experience. And he was making more money just like sitting on the couch, you know, passively back in Boston than he was. I'm like, hey, this is my full-time thing. And you're just here, you know, kicking around. Yeah, exactly. Hanging out for the experience. And so when I came back, I was really fascinated with that.
Let me give you an experience.
Yeah.
Take you on one of my adventures.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we did.
Wrestling.
We did. Yeah. Yeah. And so when I came back, I reached out to him. I'm just like, hey, you know, this is what I'm thinking. He's like, well, you need to get into real estate. Like, it's perfect for you. And I didn't really know what that meant, but I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Let's go figure it out. Step one, believe. Yeah, step one, two, get involved. So yeah, I went to a real estate office, local Keller Williams office, and I sat across the table from Russ Nolting, and he slid the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book over, and he said, I'm not going to teach you how to be a real estate agent. I'm going to teach you how to be a business owner. And that spoke to me. So immediately I chose to think of myself as a business owner and not as just a salesperson or anything like that. So that led to different opportunities within the organization. I decided that the sales side was not something that I really wanted to do. So I really injected myself into being part of the leadership and office and things like that. Had an opportunity with a really successful team on the operations side that gave me an opportunity which I really hadn't earned or maybe didn't deserve at the time as a team leader of an office that was being launched out in St. Charles County. I made the most of the opportunity and really thrived in parts of it. In particular, working with other agents to help them develop their businesses and help them to scale and et cetera. And so the coaching part was really the part that I thrived in and really enjoyed. The productivity of the office was doing really well. But in the end, I chose that I wanted to be an entrepreneur myself and I wanted to start my own business. So in 2019, I stepped away from that and started my own business.
Okay. Wow. Well, you have so that's when you kind of started your real estate investing.
Yeah.
Kind of in 2019. Because yes. You got a pretty, I mean, you were featured at the Make It Happen Multifamily, was the last one, but the one before, I believe. And you told your incredible story of how you basically turned if I'm not mistaken, it was a single family house in Maplewood where you put down like $12,000 into now it's grown to over $1 million with what you have with a, was it a 20?
Yeah.
Eight unit now.
Yeah. And that was one. Yeah. That was one building that we one, just kind of kept on turning over and over. Yeah.
We were talking about what 1031 exchanges. I think.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, I mean, it's, I guess if you could kind of tell us a little bit about that, as that's, that story just blew me away.
Yeah. Yeah. And instead of that one in particular, you know, just kind of focusing on the business as a whole. Yeah. We got into it in 2019. Again, the idea was that I wanted to really prove to myself that, that all of these things that I was coaching other people on, that I could do it myself at a high level, that, that all of this wasn't just hogwash, that, you know, really getting in touch with your mission, vision, value, belief, perspective, that having this mindset of an entrepreneur and doing the activities that entrepreneurs do was really what was going to excel and create a business worth owning that funds a purposeful life. That's what it all was. Again, why am I doing it? Because I wanted to create passive income so that I could fund a purposeful life of travel for me and my family. And again, by doing so, inspire others to do the same. That's my big why. That's my mission. And then how was I going to do that? I'm going to do it by developing multifamilies and the systems that we use to do that are ones that you can find online. Again, it's like, it doesn't, none of the information is hidden. We have everything at our fingertips now. There's YouTube videos, there's Reddit, there's, you know, podcast after podcast of how to do this. But where do people get hung up is the why. Why are they doing it? Why do you wake up in the morning and do the hard things? Why do you do the hard exercises to become the person? Right? You need to be so clear about who you're going to be. So I woke up every morning and I did the hard things. I went into, you know, the coal mine, as I refer to it, and I was doing the construction myself at the beginning and turned a few units, got those stabilized, rolled those over into more units, and to the point to where my bandwidth was running out. So then we were leading with revenue. Now we have enough revenue to hire someone. Once another person comes on, boom, it starts accelerating, right? Once you can get to that point where you have another person, your business should not just double when you bring on another person. It should be set up to 10X. And so with him came the opportunity to bring on another person. So I started to fire myself from the jobs that I should no longer be doing. I started to fire myself from doing the renovations. I started to fire myself from doing the maintenance, and then eventually firing myself from managing the properties until you get to a point to where you are at you are doing a higher level activity, right? We're just leveling up. We're leveling up. So now within that organization, the organization of Sage Network, which is purchasing, developing, and managing multifamilies, my goal now and why I have been getting back into coaching, doing masterminds with other investors and things like that is because the best use of my talents now is influence, so that we can find other investors, other people that may know where the next property is, right? Keep the deal flow going, keep the financing flow going. And two, why am I doing coaching? Well, unselfishly, because I do believe in that ripple effect. I want to help people. I genuinely want to help other people challenge their limiting beliefs and live more purposefully. But selfishly, when I am getting up in the morning and my exercise routine, when my reps are around coaching and helping other people develop their mindset and develop their habits, of course, that's going to get me into a higher level of leadership and mindset myself. So for me to be the best leader in my organization, these were the habits, these were the activities, this was the mindset that I needed to be in. So I got back into coaching to become a better leader.
You hear it all the time. You know, if you want to learn something, get a coach. If you want to master something, become a coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Abbreviated version of how that works, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had coaches throughout, and you know, and if you don't want to coach, I mean, again, it's like we have all of this information. And if you have all the information and you're still not able to do it, okay, what's the problem?
Usually it's the why.
Yeah, it's the why. It's the why. It's being able to change the habits. It's being able to reject the narrative. It's being able to reject the limiting beliefs. And a coach really helps with that.
And how many people are you coaching currently?
Yeah, different levels at this point. We have the mastermind group, which has about a dozen people in it. And then one-on-one coaching. There's like four people that I've been coaching. And it was really at the end of last year that I chose to really get back into this at a high level. And again, what did that look like for me? Getting up in the morning, doing my reps. I've been reaching out and, connecting with people that are doing this at a high level. I have a really good opportunity, to join another coaching organization that is now developing. It might be a little early to start talking about it, but, I think that they are going to be they're also just starting, but they're going to be very influential in the, real estate space. And their mission is to reduce the wealth gap, you know, broadly speaking, but also help entrepreneurs, especially real estate agents, not just make money, but start making good money choices, become wealthy, create financial wellness and financial independence for themselves. But broader than that, I also want to help you know, for lack of a better word, ordinary people, like, you know, just the average person, become more financially literate so that they can also start living more purposefully. Financial literacy, going back to what we were saying about the school systems and things like that.
I was about to say, it's terrible.
They don't teach financial literacy. Mm-hmm. I think back to, What were the financial classes that I had in school? Right. And the only thing I remember doing was getting out a fake checkbook and writing checks.
And how to balance the checkbook.
Yeah, so what are they teaching you to do? Pay the bills.
Yeah.
That's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, we are being programmed to go to a job, work for 8 hours, take out your checkbook, write the check, pay the bills. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
It is. It's just, yeah. I mean, because it's amazing the amount of people that I talk to on the mortgage side about credit and budgets and things like that, that it's just like just basic stuff that people don't think about or know about. Like I get during the application, talk about goals. You would think people going buying a house would have some sort of idea or a goal monthly payment that they would be comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I'd say probably 75% of the people that I talk to have zero idea what I'm asking. And it's just like, all right, that tells me we need to start with all this. So,
yeah. Financial literacy should be in the framework of telling your money where to go. And people just have not even really thought about that concept of telling their money where to go. And I believe that we are conditioned to think in the order of consume first, right? So where does our money go first is what are we consuming? And then we may be thinking about saving or giving a little bit and then investing last. Whereas
backwards.
Yeah, it's backwards. Because if we were being intentional and if we were, once we get to know who we are in the future and we start to invest in our future self. I mean, another, another big mindset shift is to really get to know and befriend your future self so that you want to do them favors. And one of the best favors that you can do for them is to put that invest first, put a percentage into investment first, and then give, and then save, and then consume last. And that giving part, again, going back to, you know, the narrative, I think a lot of people think giving to charity, giving to whatever, but really that giving can be giving your time as well. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of purposeful people and for entrepreneurs that are clear with their mission and vision, that giving comes back to giving their time back to communities, back to their family, and being able to show up as a better version of themselves for their families, their friends, their children, right? This is a podcast about fatherhood as well. And now that I have chosen to spend my money, like everybody spends their money, I chose to spend my money on a machine that makes more money. And that allows me to have bought back my time. And now I get to spend that time with my children. I get to be more influential in their lives and their development and help them to be better versions of themselves as well. And not just physically present, not just there at the dinner table, but being able to shut off and be present as well and be a good influence and not just a autopilot version of myself exhausted from a day's work with nothing left to give, no gas left in the tank, you know?
That's awesome.
Now, do you think entrepreneurship is for everybody, or do you think that there's some people out there that it's just not suited for?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's different levels of entrepreneurship. I think that there is entrepreneurship for the people that are risk takers, that may be like, you know, deeper inside have that level of risk that's okay with them. And then within that, there can also be intrapreneurs, people that are entrepreneurs inside someone else's ecosystem. There's a little bit less risk, but still the opportunity for growth. And then it's okay to be an employee. Like I don't want to poo on that at all. I think that you can still live a very intentional life within that employee category of the cash flow quadrant. Another group that I am part of locally is the Choose FI group. And the people there, so Choose FI, Choose Financial Independence. It's part of the greater FIRE movements, financial independence, retire early. And they are all about intentional living. And most of them are employees. There's not as many entrepreneurs. But what they typically, or what I've identified as kind of their path, is that they use employment as a stable source of income. They invest rapidly. And then financial independence for them, they can stay within comfort. Once their money is working for them and has created stability, they can start to say no to things that they no longer want to have in their life. They can say no to their job. And quite often what that turns into is entrepreneurship for them. Because I would say that maybe entrepreneurship is for everybody once they get to that level of security that they need. A lot of people have that personality type. They're risk averse. They want that safety, security. My wife's like that. And she's also very entrepreneurial. She needs that safety net of a more regular income.
Yeah. My wife is as well, for sure.
Yeah.
She definitely likes that. You know, we've been talking about her possibly leaving, you know, teaching for a long time now. But I just don't think that she just... I think she's hesitant to give up the, you know, the safety net of a salary. And it's also like, I don't think she is ready to leave her career. You know, it's a big decision to kind of leave something that she's put the last 10 years of her life into, which, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there in similar situations where, you know, they don't, maybe they could step away if they wanted to, but they don't want to because they're, it's a big risk. And, you know, people have different levels of, you know, risk taking or risk adversity or people have different levels of risk that they're willing to take.
Yeah. And within the framework of financial wellness and reaching financial independence, I think that that's a great combination, having those two people together, because you can live off of that stable income.
If you
choose to make that the your security number, so going back to, you know, getting loans and things like that, if your basic needs can be paid for, can be funded by that W-2 safe job, it allows the entrepreneur to go out there and take risks and accelerate that opportunity. And then once that side of the equation starts to, you know, make that money printing machine, it can replace that the W-2 job. And then that creates more opportunity and more freedom.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that always worried with my, when I was married with my ex-wife. I mean, she was a realtor too. And, you know, so we didn't have that. So she's commission only, I'm commission only. So there was never that stable income, which is always like, all right, you know, we're constantly working to make sure that we're not running into any issues or things like that, that we, you know, I think it did. It limited us on some risks that we could take because we didn't have that stable income.
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes sense. How would you say being a father has influenced your like businesses? I mean,
yeah. Being a father, I mean, reshaped the conversation for me. It reshaped my identity again. And I say that it moved the goalpost as far as what we needed for income, but that's because now I focus on it reshaped my identity as a provider as well. A provider, not just in the sense of giving them what they need, but also providing them with these opportunities to thrive, to learn, to grow. And so it was a big motivator to step up and really create this business to fund our perfect life that can help them to become the best versions of themselves. So what does that look like now is, again, getting this business to the point where it has grown. We're growing leaders inside of it to take over these positions that I'm firing myself from, so that we can start to travel and experience new things. That's going to help to give them perspective and help them to identify their own mission, vision, values.
It's beautiful. Awesome. Love it, man.
Well, if you could give one no BS piece of advice to someone who feels stuck, what would it be?
Yeah. Again, it's starting to get repetitive here, but it's like, start with the why. Again, quite often we think about what we're doing and then how we do it. And we very rarely get to the why. Start with the why. Find out, why are you doing this? What is important to you? Identify your mission, your vision, your values. Like, why are you here on earth? Because that is going to help you to shape the how. How am I going to do it? And it's going to influence your decision-making. It's going to change your autopilot. It's going to change, when you change your feelings, it's going to change your autopilot and help you to automatically make the decisions that are in alignment with your goals. When we don't have clear goals, we are going to make decisions based on our environment, based on things that are being sold to us. We need to write the story. We need to write the narrative of what's important to us and why we are making these decisions. Perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. But Tom, I want to be mindful of your time here. So, you know, is there anything that we didn't discuss that you wanted to?
You know, well, we've been talking about all these habits and things like that. You guys talk to a lot of successful people. I mean, what are some of the clues that you often see from successful people?
Well, I mean, one of them would just be a lot of things we're talking about here. They all have a very clear why on why they're doing what they're doing. They all seem to be very driven individuals that are willing to take action. You know, there's one thing to just read the book, listen to the podcast, watch the YouTube video, but to actually go out there, you know, get their hands dirty and start implementing what they're learning. That would be, I would say, some of the biggest things that I've seen through all these people that we've interviewed so far.
That, and they're very conscious of their time. They've got their schedules time blocked. They've got everything that they need to do. They've got multiple things that they're doing in a day, and they're very structured with their time. That's been a big one. That's been a pretty common theme amongst everyone is, you know, time blocking. My schedule is blocked off like this, 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 and this, and this, so I can get everything done. And to that point where you were talking about people being able to say no, they're at that point. Pretty much everybody was like, no, we're at that point where I can say no to people and I can say no to things because, again, being back and so in touch with what their why is, that they're not going to let anything get in the way of that.
Yeah, it's funny. We see these high-achieving people, and you ask them what they do, and sometimes it's hard for them to even tell you because it's this and this and this and this. And we believe, well, they must be working all the time. Right. They must not sleep. However, it's really interesting because the truth is that some of them are working less than the average person because they've gotten so intentional. They've really identified what those activities are that's going to get them the best result.
They got the systems and processes in place.
Systems and processes, and eventually when you get high enough, it always comes down to talent acquisition, being able to train and lead those talented people and give them the opportunity to thrive within your ecosystem.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anything else you want to talk about or anything else you want to pitch before we get out there? What's the name of your company is?
Yeah. My company is Sage Network. Okay. You can find me, you can see more about my coaching on Sage Wealth Coaching on Instagram. You can follow me on that. You can contact me through that. Send me a direct message or schedule a consultation. I have, you know, free consultations help you to try and discover what's important to you and identify some of those actions that go along with it. This is for everybody, you know. Financial wellness and financial independence is accessible to everyone. You just need to put yourself in the right framework and in the right mindset to accomplish it.
Awesome. Well, we like to end it with one last question. It's called the Tombstone Game. Here lies Tom. What's it say on your tombstone?
Inspired me to be better.
Perfect.
Perfect, man. I love it.
It's awesome.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button for us yet, please do so. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.